Welcome back, sports fans. We've got a great show for you today. We dive into the tornado that is the NBA free agency, including LeBron deciding to go to the Lakers, Paul George staying with the Thunder, and Kawhi doing his best where in the world is Carmen Sandiego impression, because nobody knows where he's going. We also talk about the Oregon State winning the College World Series, do our Pac-12 season in review, a lot of great highlights from the year, as well as we bring on Greg Garland, our World Cup expert, to talk about the final eight teams in the knockout round. And the Blitz Package heats up as we talk about Ben Franklin, bald eagles, and how many hot dogs is acceptable to eat on the 4th of July. But first, tomorrow is our nation's Independence Day and your jam of the week, Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. Today is July 3rd, tomorrow is July 4th, and I don't think there's any better American song than Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA.
Classic rock in general is just patriotic.
Yeah.
It just is. Guitar, rock and roll, just patriotic.
Yeah.
And Bruce Springsteen's the man, obviously.
He is the man. Great jam, but you know, other than the 4th of July, there isn't a whole lot of sports news this week, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, we were debating about even doing the podcast.
Yeah, because it's just pretty down week.
What has happened in the last 7 days that's even worth talking about?
Not much other than the World Cup, but we're bringing Greg on to talk about that a little bit later. So I guess, yeah, that's about it. I guess LeBron to the Lakers is kind of cool. Oh, I'm just kidding. I know how much you love that. So yes, yeah, I'm gonna give it to you because. So that was a complete joke, obviously, for the listeners out there. The NBA free agency has been a tornado of movement of cities being crumbled. The biggest of which is LeBron left Cleveland and is a Laker, signed a 4-year, $154 million deal. That's pretty impressive. Why don't we start there and then we'll go through some of the other names of free agency. So, how do you like his move to LA?
You know, I feel like throughout the last 6 months, throughout the NBA playoffs, and then once the season was over and free agency, you know, begun, I thought that that made the most sense. And you and I and Dan talked about this. If you looked at all the options out there, and if you look at Vegas's odds on where he was going to go, the Lakers made the most sense.
Yeah.
But I still just didn't think it would happen. I thought a sign-in trade would happen. I thought somebody's going to move here, or somebody's going to move there, and he would end up somewhere else, almost because it seemed too good to be true.
And
from what I've heard, and at least from what's been reported, it seemed like a lot of the insiders kind of saw this coming, you know, a mile away.
Right.
A lot of people knew that this was coming down the pipe and just, you know, happened to keep it quiet. But I'm still a little bit in shock. You know, yeah. I'm not going to lie. I'm a Clipper fan, not a Laker fan.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to see him here than Houston, or if he was going to stay in Cleveland, or if he was going to go somewhere like Philly. I just feel like this is great for the NBA. Mm-hmm. And having the Lakers be good and bring them back to prominence, and with the Celtics coming back up to prominence,
yes,
that's great for the NBA. And I know a lot of people are sitting here saying, after some of the other moves that have taken place, and we'll talk about that, that what's the point of even watching the next NBA season? I am so excited about this next NBA season, even the regular season.
Right.
That I feel like those people need to take a step back and look and see that there's been so much movement in this free agency over the last couple of weeks that you can't help but want to see how it pans out, right?
Right. I mean, there's so many new faces on so many new teams. It's going to be awesome. I wanted to say, as you as a Clipper fan and me as a Celtic fan, this could possibly be the worst move that he could have made. However, for everybody else out there and for the NBA, I do think that this is a good move. I think, you know, they've moved some pieces since then that are a little bit interesting, but I think that they're more setting up for the long term, which we'll get into as well. But I think him as a Laker, like you said, you have the biggest name in the NBA. Whenever any sort of question or debate is brought up about basketball, the answer or the point of discussion is always LeBron. And so to have him in such a huge market in L.A., surrounded by fame and Hollywood and all of that, I feel like is going to be good. I would have liked to have seen him go to somewhere that he could have maybe won immediately, because I don't necessarily want to see the Warriors win again. I like the 3 out of 4, and that's where I'd kind of like to see it end. But that isn't out of the question when they make some moves for Kawhi. And I think that that is kind of what's next down the pipeline. I don't know. But they did add – they also added Rajon Rondo, the Lakers did, to a one-year $9 million deal, which is, in my opinion, a little bit interesting, because you have Lonzo Ball, who's supposed to be the next – Magic Johnson. So to bring in a veteran point guard who actually had a tremendous season last year with the Pelicans, that's going to be interesting.
So let me throw that back at you, right? You say that you wish LeBron had gone somewhere else so that Golden State didn't win the championship next year. Now throw me a scenario where that's the case. Like, where does LeBron go where Golden State isn't the odds-on favorite to win the championship next year? Let's pretend that all of the free agency move that happened after LeBron happened still took place. For example, which we haven't talked about yet, Boogie Cousins still goes to the Warriors for $6 million for 1 year, which is a steal. Say that still takes place and that Golden State team sits how they sit right now. Where does LeBron go where all of a sudden we're like, well, they're going to challenge Golden State next year?
Yeah. I did think that Philly would have challenged immediately. I think with young stars in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, who are both – Ben Simmons is 6'10", and Joel Embiid's an athletic 7'1", and then you have still the young or the old veteran crafty shooter in J.J. Redick, and then you just add another fourth guy out there. They could put me or you out there, and we could, I think, compete with the Warriors.
So let me – I just want to – you said something, right? You said J.J. Redick, and I love J.J.
I love J.J.
We're both big J.J. fans.
Yeah.
J.J. signed – a one-year extension with the Sixers for $12 to $13 million reportedly. Yeah. Put that in perspective, because Boogie just signed a $5.3 million deal with the Warriors.
Yeah, that's insane.
Now think about how impactful JJ can be.
Yeah.
And think about how impactful Boogie can be.
Boogie, so the Warriors right now have three guys on their team that last season averaged over 25 points a game. Boogie Cousins averaged like 25.4 points before he got injured. And then you had KD and Steph, who are just over 26 or something like that.
It's absolutely crazy. He's a career like 26 and 13 guy. Like he's an absolute beast.
Oh my gosh!
He's coming off a ruptured Achilles.
Right. He's not going to be ready till December or January.
And his attitude is questionable.
Right.
And you never know how he's going to recover off of an injury like that. So there's a lot of question marks, and so I understand why. Because I was watching the Jump today.
Yeah.
And there were one thing they were saying was important in that nobody came out and offered Boogie a great option.
Well, the Pelicans,
there wasn't five or six teams out there that were trying to offer him a supermax or a max or even $15 million.
No, I think the Pelicans were the only one who tried, and they offered him like 2 years, $40 million, which is still pretty good. But that, like, JJ Redick got paid like $22 million last year from the Sixers.
The Pelicans offered him 2 years, $40 million.
I think so. Yeah, something along those lines, and he turned it down.
Because I heard that Boogie asked his agent to reach out to Golden State. Like, it went that direction. It didn't even go the other direction. He said, hey, I'm not happy with the offers I'm getting. Reach out to Golden State because I want to win a championship. And then that's kind of how the whole thing gets started. So I didn't hear what you just said. But if that's the truth, that says a lot about him and his drive to get a ring as opposed to just making money, which actually makes me think a little highly of him.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to imagine, like, that's AD's team. Pelicans are AD's team. So at some point he's going to run into where he's probably just feeling like he's second fiddle all the time, because Anthony Davis is unbelievable, right? So, like, in my opinion, it's better for him to get out now when he can do this and there's room for him to do it and the Warriors are still all together. Because, as you said on this podcast before, you don't think that they're going to be together in the next year or so, especially mm-hmm. when Klay Thompson takes maybe goes to the Lakers next year. But I think it's a great move on his part because they're going to win again. So
one thing I will say about that, and I've been telling people this all day because I feel like I've been talking people off the ledge all day. One thing I will say is you never know about injuries, first of all, right? Kevin Durant has a tendency to get injured. His feet have been injured multiple times. Steph Curry has a tendency to get injured. He's not injury prone like a Chris Paul would be, but he has been injured multiple times in his career for pretty legitimate stints. You take both of those things and you add a Draymond Green and a Boogie Cousins to a locker room, both very volatile personalities.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I wouldn't bet my 401k on the Warriors winning the championship, because I probably would. But what I am saying is that you never know what's going to happen. So I am going to watch the NBA season next year, because if something crazy does happen with LeBron in LA and then Boston coming up and Philly coming up,
yeah,
if something happens to the Warriors, it could just be an absolute incredible playoffs.
That's fair. You can never guarantee, you'll never know the injury situation, especially when you have the craziness that is Draymond and Boogie in the same locker room. They could throw chairs at the same time and hit each other on accident and both get injured, because that's a real possibility with the way that they react to things. So
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you never know. Two birds, one stone. Two chairs, two all-stars is actually how that saying goes. But as far as... I wanted to, before we, I'm going to go down the list of the main free agents that have gone so far. So LeBron, like I said, signed a four-year, $154 million deal. I did the calculations. Kyle, this is absolutely insane. Just listen to this real quick. So four seasons, $154 million. That means he gets $38.5 million per season. That's $469,512 per game. That's $117,378 per quarter. $9,781 per minute, and $163 per second of the games that he'll play next year. $163 per second that he'll play. That's absolutely, wow. That's ridiculous money. That's absurd.
But he deserves, he deserves every penny. If you look at, Cleveland, right, if you were into economics, right, if you looked at the Cavaliers and the city of Cleveland, how much money he brought in revenue wise, how much money he brought in revitalizing the area around the stadium, revitalizing the city of Cleveland in general, he would be worth five times that.
Oh yeah, well,
I feel like anybody that was into those stats would agree with you. So as ridiculous as that sounds, he's worth it.
I would love to just play one quarter with that salary.
I know, right?
And I'd shoot it every time I touched it. Every single time. I wouldn't even know if I was looking at the basket or not. I would just throw it in that direction. So the rest of the free agency. So you thought it was a good decision overall, LeBron. And yeah. You don't hate Boogie Cousins? You don't think he's a sellout like KD? Or do you think he's worse than KD?
So... I don't think it's as bad as KD, because I feel like KD is in that upper echelon to where he could win a championship as a number one. He's good enough to be that guy. He is a MVP caliber player. Obviously, he's won an MVP scoring title guy. He could be a top 10 all-time NBA player, top 5 all-time NBA player. He has that talent, and he kind of bailed on that chance to join Golden State. I don't think Boogie has that ability. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's 100% a flaw of his ability as a basketball player. I think it's also a result of the game today. And being a center, I don't think it's easy to be a five, to be a big guy, and be Shaq, to be right. Will, to be Bill Russell, Tim Duncan's not even a true center. He's a power forward. So it's like
The best power forward ever.
Yeah. Yeah. So to be in that position and to try to be the number one guy to win a championship, it's probably not going to happen. So he's going to have to join somebody.
Right. No, agreed.
I don't think KD had to join somebody. I think he is good enough. And he just said, what's that team that won last year? And he has to join them. Yeah. So I fault KD a little more than Boogie, but I see where we're going with that.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with the Warriors, because the Warriors are in that space, that pace and space offense. They play small all the time. Sometimes KD is the tallest player on the court, and he's a small forward, you know, and I think Boogie is a true power forward center, and so to see if he can switch all of the screens and do all of that that the Warriors like to do will be interesting to see how he fits in. But, you know, good for him. Chasing a ring. I don't blame him. So the other signings were, like I said, Rajon Rondo also signed with the Lakers, 1 year, $9 million. JaVale McGee also signed with the Lakers for a couple of new headbands and a box of Cracker Jacks. Paul George re-signed with the Thunder, which was a big surprise, 4 years, $127 million. Julius Randle signed with the Pelicans, basically taking Boogie's spot, for 2 years, $18 million. And the other kind of like second-tier piece that was out there that people were waiting to see what would happen was Aaron Gordon, the dunk contest just connoisseur. You remember he jumped over the mascot and did the ball under his legs? He re-signed with the Magic, 4 years, $84 million, so he's not going anywhere. But those were the biggest ones. What would you say, aside from LeBron, because I know that's obviously the biggest news, but aside from him, what would you say was the biggest move?
Well, I think surprise-wise, Paul George staying with OKC was the most surprising. I'm still perplexed to what his motivation was. Mm-hmm. I just don't get it. Like, I guess from a financial perspective, it makes sense because you're making barely less than LeBron's making in 4 years, and you are not. I mean,
Nowhere near. Yeah, I mean,
you might as well clean LeBron's shoes. Like, he's not even anywhere near LeBron James' talent. He is the third option in OKC on a team that got dusted in the first round.
Right.
Now, granted, that was an upset. That team is better than that, but they're not going to win a championship the way they sit right now.
No.
And having to pay Carmelo, having to pay Paul George, and having to pay Russ, they're just not going to do it.
But the Thunder are going to buy out Carmelo's deal and let him leave. And they think Carmelo's going to Houston or L.A. That is the word on the street as of right now. They'll save about $90 million if they just buy him out and let someone else pick up the rest of his contract. And he's old. And so I think that nobody understood the kind of bond that him and Russell Westbrook had, apparently, because it was enough to not go. And I do think that is a big part of it. If you love who you're playing with, same with the Warriors. All those guys figured out a way to take pay cuts over in different years to make the pay structure work over a 4 or 5 year period. And I think those two guys have a strong bond, are good friends. And I think the two of them together is pretty explosive. It'll be who they kind of surround them with. But they are better, I think, in my opinion, than exiting the NBA Finals or the NBA playoffs in the first round. I think they're better than that. So we'll see what happens. I really like the Julius Randle to the Pelicans. I love the way he plays. I think that's a big loss for the Lakers, even though they did get LeBron, so obviously nothing looks like a loss at this point. But I think he plays his butt off. He kind of does everything, and he's like a Draymond Green, and he plays hard, and he'll guard, and he'll take it to the rim. He can also shoot a little outside, a little jump shot. So I like that. Him and AD, I think, could work well together, and then you throw in Holiday for them. So we'll see how that goes. But did anything piss you off? Did anything bother you?
Well, yeah, DJ left the Clippers to go to the Mavericks. That pissed me off.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even. Oh, that is official, right? Did he officially do that, or he's still in the process?
Well, you can't officially sign until Friday.
Okay. But he's made it clear that that's where he's going.
Well, he verbally agreed like he did last time.
Yeah, I was going to say. He's kind of like that guy that, like, keeps getting back together with the same girl and says, like, I'm going to be different, I promise, and then goes back. He just does the same stuff anyways. But, yeah, that is true. He did verbally say that. So I'm assuming he will go. He is a Texas guy, though.
So Chris Paul signed a 4-year, $160 million deal with Houston.
What is that? That's ridiculous to me.
Which is $6 million more than the Lakers gave LeBron.
That's absurd.
And Chris Paul is older.
Hurt?
He is 5 times more injury prone.
Not as athletic.
And he's not the best player in the world.
No. And he's... Here's the only thing that I can see out of this whole thing is that the Rockets thought, we were literally one game away to making the finals and most likely winning it had he not got hurt. So we're going to do whatever it takes to keep him here.
And if, and honestly, it's been so long that Houston's, you know, won a championship. I mean, there's been other teams that have been longer, but I don't really fault that strategy.
No, you can't. I mean, you literally, they were, and they almost won game seven still. Like, they played pretty well. I mean, they shot really bad. They had that long, but they didn't, I think outside of the 3-point drought, they were okay. And if they just had Chris Paul, I think it would have been a completely different story. I still think the Warriors would have won, but I think that having Chris Paul would have made a difference.
So two things on Houston too, right? Trevor Ariza left. Trevor Ariza signed a 1-year, $15 million deal with Phoenix.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he came to be neighbors with you.
Yeah.
And then Clint Capella is still a restricted free agent and has not signed yet.
But I feel like Houston's going to find a way to get him.
They'll probably sign him, but
yeah,
Houston has not brought the full team back that they had last year. And I feel like Golden State's only gotten better.
Yeah.
So Golden State has...
rough. Trevor Ariza, he was a big piece because he was kind of their defensive go-to guy, but could also score, kind of could do a lot of things on the offensive end too. Interesting. You liked the JaVale McGee signing with the Lakers for a couple headbands and a box of Cracker Jacks?
Yeah, JaVale McGee is, you know, like a DJ version 0.5.
Yeah, he's...
right? Like, he's like, same guy, like, he's going to rebound for you, he's going to rock the rim for you, he's going to play defense, you know, be a tough guy down low, although I did see him miss multiple layups in the finals.
Yeah.
Which was really hard to watch. Like, they threw him down low and literally had nobody around him. And he, like, took the basketball and took two hands and jabbed it into the bottom of the rim.
Yeah.
And then looked around like, what just happened? So that was a little bit concerning. But that's a good signing. I mean, he's a good –
he's athletic. He's a huge
starting center. So.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. The last piece to fall is Kawhi Leonard is doing his best Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego impression. No one really knows where he's going next. So we will see. Did you ever play that game? Did that joke go over your head, or do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm not talking about. Okay.
It just wasn't funny. It just wasn't funny. Is this thing on? Can you hear me? Because I thought it was pretty good.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I get you.
Anywho, I do think the Lakers are doing everything they can to set up for him to come next year if they can't make some trades for him this year. So we will see what happens. Anything else on NBA free agency?
No, I'm excited. I can't wait to see, you know, what happens with Kawhi and what happens in the regular season next year.
Yeah.
I feel terrible saying this, but I hope somebody on the Warriors gets hurt. I feel like if KD or Steph gets hurt, all of a sudden everybody's in play.
You're right. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a clear favorite anymore. I feel like Houston might take that spot, but like it's still kind of like, well, but the Celtics and Sixers are good, and Lakers have LeBron, so maybe.
So yeah, I just need one shoe to drop, and by one shoe to drop, I mean like one ACL to snap.
That's so bad.
Yeah, terrible. What are you gonna do?
Oh well, let's jump over to Pac-12 news. We had some huge Pac-12 news. Oregon State is the College World Series champ. They won the best of three series against Arkansas, and after losing the opener 4-1, the Beavs had their backs against the wall and needed to win two in a row. In the second game, Oregon State was down 3-2 in the top of the ninth, so their last at bat. Caden Greiner popped up what looked like to be the final out of the game, but Arkansas's first baseman, second baseman, and right fielder let it drop in like a huge just what the heck happened moment. And then that's when magic happened. With two outs and two strikes, Greiner singled to tie the game 3-3. Then Big Daddy Trevor Larnach hit a two-run home run to give the Beavs a 5-3 win. And then OSU closed out the ninth to win 5-3 in game two. Then they went to the final game, 3, and they absolutely just put a shellacking on Arkansas, winning 5-0 behind the hot bats of Adley Rushman and Zach Taylor. The Beavs also got a strong pitching outing from freshman Kevin Abel, who pitched all 9 innings and gave up 2 hits and no runs. Abel's 10th strikeout of the night brought the Beavers their third national title in school history. Two questions. How bad do you feel for the Arkansas players, and how awesome was that comeback and the Beavers winning it all?
The whole run was great.
Oh, yeah.
The whole run was awesome. I mean, having your back against the wall that many times and somehow pulling it out is fantastic. I mean, if that third game in the finals, to have that freshman pitcher throw the game that he threw, and yeah. The entire game, the commentators are saying that Arkansas's offense was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And that it's the best, you know, offense in the country, or one of the best, and they were going to come back. They're going to get some hits. Something was going to happen. And that pitcher just kept fighting him off. And I think he retired 10 or 12 in a row.
Yeah, something like that.
Something, right? And the first pitcher in a long time or ever to allow only two hits. Something crazy. So he had an amazing outing. And I think, you know, facing elimination, you know, four or five times in a row and then coming back is such an incredible feat. So hats off to the Beavs, man.
Absolutely. What a run. Yeah. And so that leads me to the next point I was going to bring up. So Kevin Abel, that freshman pitcher, he set some records along the way. No pitcher had ever won four games in a single College World Series before, and Abel did so, adding his fourth in style. The final, obviously, he became just the fourth pitcher in College World Series history to throw a complete game shutout in the championship game, and against Arkansas, the team that hadn't been shut out all season in its previous 68 games. His two hits allowed are a championship game record in a complete game as well. However, there was a lot of backlash towards the Oregon State coach and pitching staff because he threw 152 pitches over 2 days and 247 pitches over the last 6 days of the tournament. I read an article that the guy said this was basically borderline abuse, and that Casey, the head coach of the Oregon State Beavers, showed that he was more interested in winning a national... Quotes from the article saying that Casey showed that he was more interested in winning a national title than protecting the health of a valuable young pitcher who has a promising future ahead of him. Unfortunately, this is a story that is all too common in the world of selfish college baseball coaches. Wow. I was like, wow, that is extremely harsh for what I would imagine. That freshman pitcher was probably like, coach, I'm feeling it. Leave me in. Don't take me out. And I would imagine as an athlete that you are going to do whatever it takes to win. And you are not thinking about super long term.
And listen, this isn't like the guy that runs down the middle between the tackles, gets doinked and falls on the ground and then walks to the wrong sideline. And the coach runs to the other side of the football field, and he's like, hey, you're right. And he's like, babe, is that you? And he's like, no, just, you know, this is the next play. Like, this guy's fine.
Yeah.
20 years ago, 15 years ago, these guys used to throw 120 pitches every single game.
Yeah.
They can still do it. I feel like pitchers these days have become a little bit babied. Mm. And the fact that fourth, fifth inning, they get pulled. We got middle relievers. We got late relievers. We got setup guys. We got closers.
We got second out of the seventh inning pitchers. That's it. That's all they do. They just come in for the...
We got a lefty to come in to be a righty. Righty to come in to be a lefty. It's like, oh my gosh. Somebody come in, weather the storm.
Yeah.
Throw some pitches. Take a couple runs. Get to the eighth. And then if a closer's got to come in. And what I loved about watching that third game was that coach let that freshman battle through some adversity.
Agreed.
And win the game. And maybe he was freaking exhausted the next day. Maybe his arm was really beat up. But they let a young kid just keep going and going and going when he was feeling it. And that won them the game. And I will never fault a coach for that. Yes, I understand that there's so many injuries in pitching these days with baseball. And people are getting Tommy John surgery right and left. And I understand that. But, I mean, people did it. People have done it forever. I'm not sure. I don't know why people these days can't do it too.
And, you know, my thing is, we wouldn't have been able to read that last stat about him having a complete game and breaking all those records if the coach took him out. So it's a lose-lose for the kid, right? Because I think it's a lose-lose situation, not necessarily for the kid. But if you pull him out, he doesn't get to do what he did and set all those records. And if you leave him in, then the coach gets the backlash that he's abusing, which I think is such... That's just crap, in my opinion. Like, I don't know. For both of us who have been athletes, we have at some point been tired, hurt, injured, and wanted to play through it. And I have never had a coach that made me do something, and it's always been up to me. And I would imagine this was the same situation. And the kid did what he had to do to win a College World Series. That's a memory that he'll have for life. So it's I don't blame him.
It's amazing that after that team fights through that adversity, wins the College World Series in a game three, that somebody still has something negative to write about it.
Absolutely. And my thing is, too,
are you kidding me?
You can't protect everybody from everything, right? Like, you're not going to tell him to, like, hey, don't throw it all over the summer because we got to save your arm for when you're in the pros. Like, no, you're going to tell him, hey, make sure to warm up properly. Make sure to keep your throw count low over the summer, and then we'll get you back working when you come back in the fall and the winter. Like, that's just the way it goes. But you can't protect – you can't tell basketball guys in the offseason to not go play pickup and not work on their jump shots and their dunks at the rim because you're afraid that they're going to get hurt.
Whoever that writer is – he has kids that play t-ball, and he gives them a trophy even if they strike out 55 times. That's all I'm saying. That's the kind of guy that writes an article like that.
Yeah, I just thought that was absolutely absurd. So, you know, this has been a great show so far. You have not offended me as much as you normally do. So this is good.
Well, thanks.
Oh, man. Okay, well, so obviously the end of the college baseball World Series was the end of the 2017-2018 sporting year, and the Pac-12, like I said earlier, had one hell of a year. For the 13th year in a row and the 17th time in the last 18 years, the Pac-12 leads the nation with the most NCAA championships won in this academic year, with Oregon State capturing their third NCAA baseball championship. Member institutions of the Pac-12 collected 12 NCAA titles, as six different institutions won at least one title. So I know that's hard. I'm going to break it down a little bit. But for the fourth consecutive year and fifth time in 6 years, the Conference of Champions has collected double-digit NCAA titles. No other conference has reached double digits in an academic year. The 12 titles came in the form of 9 women's championships and 3 men's. The Pac-12 more than doubled the next closest conference in 2017-2018, with the ACC and SEC tying for second with 5 each, followed by the Big 12's 3. So the Pac-12 men's winners, Stanford won men's soccer, UCLA won men's water polo, and obviously Oregon State won men's baseball. For women's, Stanford won women's soccer, swimming and diving, and tennis. UCLA won women's gymnastics and beach volleyball. USC outdoor track, and with their epic come from behind 4x4 relay, as well as water polo, and Arizona won women's golf, and Cal won women's rowing. The women only did not win 5 of the NCAA titles this year: cross country, volleyball, basketball, indoor track, and softball. So the women absolutely destroyed everyone else. You know, I know we talked a lot about how basketball and football had really bad years, but when you look big picture, Pac-12 had a hell of a year. Absolutely crushed it.
No, they've been killing it. I was slightly distracted by the fireworks going on in the background.
You have fireworks already? July 3rd.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, born in the USA.
People are so impatient.
Yeah.
You just can't wait till tomorrow. You just can't do it. You have one day. You have the day off. It's a Wednesday. I get it. Tuesday night at freaking 8:25. Just can't do it. Got to set them off. But yeah, no, I mean, outside of basketball and football, men's sports, I mean, outside of those two, Pac-12, very, very strong performance. Obviously, a couple incredible wins with Oregon State baseball and then the USC track. USC water sports are continuously dominant every single year. That's a powerhouse, you know, program, water polo, swimming, all those sports. So that's something that we'll probably see year over year.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, that's not even including there were so many runner-ups. Like, women's basketball, if you remember, had like 4 teams in the Sweet 16, 2 teams in the Elite 8 or something like that. Women's softball had like 3 teams in the Final 8 or something like that too. So, you know, we are Pac-12 homers. We'll admit that. But also, the data supports us. Stats support us. We have the best conference in the nation, top to bottom. And when we do finally get a football team to make it to the college football playoff, they'll be talking about that hands down. And we'll have been the first to bring that to everybody's attention on this podcast.
You said that Stanford won men's and women's
soccer. First time ever that a school has won both men and women's national championships in the same sport. Soccer, at least. Sorry.
Dang, that's cool.
That is cool. That's very cool. But now it's your turn. You've got some stuff lined up for us, yeah, for the Kyle with the news. We're going to go right ahead.
All right. So the news is limited these days. I'm not going to lie to you. There isn't the robust amount of news there has been in the previous weeks, but I found a few things I thought were interesting leading into the football season here in 3 or 4 months. Athlon Sports came out with their top 50 wide receivers in the country, ooh, and the Pac-12 had three of them. So number three in the country was Arizona State's Keneal Harry.
Ooh, okay.
I'm not familiar, but obviously the kid's a stud.
Yeah.
And then number 16 was Tyler Vaughns from USC. The young kid hasn't got a ton of playing time, so really, really looking forward to see what he could do this upcoming season. And then number 29 is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford. He's had a couple really big years, so I'm sure that he will continue that going forward. When I was looking at these wide receiver rankings, one thing I was thinking about was, you know, what do the running back rankings look like in the Pac-12? And so I pulled up what the top 10 running back rankings look like in the Pac-12 coming up to this upcoming season, and I have the top five for you. The first two should not be surprising. So Bryce Love, senior from Stanford, being number one. Miles Gaskin, the senior from Washington, being number two. Those are not a surprise to anyone, but the next three I wasn't super familiar with. So Zach Moss, the junior from Utah, 210-pound Moss is a load with speed who racked up more than 1,100 yards in 2017. He was best late in the season, running for 7 touchdowns in the final 5 games. Still fireworks going off behind me. Stephen Carr, sophomore for USC, big-time stud, with being a freshman last year, coming up, running up behind Rojo. He didn't get a ton of carries, but when he did, he's a big, big, strong guy who can run between the tackles and kind of, you know, separate from guys on the outside. Carr only ran for 363 yards and 3 scores as a freshman, but I would bet he's at least gets 4 times that in 2018 with Rojo going to the NFL. He's big, fast, and a natural runner who should be the great next year for the Trojans. And then number 5 is Patrick Laird, senior from Cal. The former walk-on ran for more than 1,100 yards in 2017 and scored 9 touchdowns. He's also a great receiving threat out of the backfield. So obviously Bryce Love and Miles Gaskin are studs, but those next three guys should be young kids who should make a big impact in the Pac-12 coming up next football season. And that's Kyle with the news.
All right, that is some good stuff. Just you talking gets me so excited for football season, and we are just around the corner. Technically the 2017-2018 academic sporting year is over, which means the next season to come up is any of the sports in the fall, and that includes football. And I can't wait.
Me too, man. Me too.
But speaking of football, the other kind, the worldly football, we have a very special guest coming on with us today. Our World Cup expert. He has been in Russia through the TV watching it. He's not actually in Russia, but he has been watching a lot of the games. Greg Garland, we're going to bring him on in a few minutes. So here he is, Greg Garland.
Hey, guys, how we doing? Happy soon to be fall.
Sorry, that was my sound thing, Greg. That was my sound thing, Greg. But thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. How has Russia been through the TV, what you've seen?
It looks good, man. It looks a little hot sometimes, maybe a little cold sometimes. I don't really know. It feels good.
First,
I got a stat correction for you. You guys keep saying it wrong. It's Pac-10-12.
That is what Pat Carney referred to it as, the Pac-10-12. But it is officially the Pac-12. you know, Kyle and I talked about this a little bit last time, but the World Cup is awesome. I mean, you forget how inspirational it is, how motivational, how just emotional it is. When you watch it on TV, I'm telling you, we're lucky in that we have the games every day, 7 and 11. And for a while there was, 7, 8, or 5, 8, and 11, where we could get up and actually not have it be super out of our sleep patterns to actually catch some of these games. So what has been your overall impression of the World Cup so far?
Oh, man, I just... With you guys who don't watch soccer as much as I do, I mean, I'm the English Premier League soccer fan who gets up at the 6 a.m. games. This has been drama, intense, fun. I mean, I think I've watched about 90% of the games So to hear guys who don't watch soccer that are that into it, just imagine that kind of times 10 for us who follow it year round. It's been great. Even the game today, I mean, England went to penalty kicks, a goal in the last 2 minutes of the game to tie it up from Colombia. It's been fun, and it's a shame that it's every 4 years. I wish it could be more often.
Absolutely, I agree. So where we're at now, we're kind of late in the game and bringing it up, obviously, but sometimes the pool play is a little hard to talk about because it happens so quickly. We are now in the second round of the knockout stage. So the way the World Cup works, for anybody that isn't aware or hasn't really been following too much, is there's 32 teams that are in groups of four, so eight groups of four. They play pool play. The top two teams from each of those groups moves on to the knockout round of 16 teams. The first round happened, and we are now left with eight teams. Those eight teams are Uruguay versus France, Brazil versus Belgium, Russia versus Croatia, and Sweden versus England. But Greg, talk to us a little bit about the first round of 16, because there was a ton of penalty kicks. They're almost like half the games went into extra time, if I'm not mistaken. There was drama, Messi and Ronaldo. There's so many stories that I don't even know really where to begin, so I'm just going to let you take it away.
Well, yeah, I mean, it started right from the get-go when Russia just put a thump on their first opponent and won like 5-0 in the first game. It was just something to kind of kick off the games. And then you got Germany. Where did they go?
They didn't even they are like Kawhi Leonard. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Nobody knows. They just kind of vanished.
Yeah, I mean, they were favorites going into the tournament. They were the team that was supposed to win it all back-to-back. And they disappeared. Messi decided that he wanted to play the last game, I think, of the group stages and kind of surprised everybody, and they snuck through. Mexico was the world's favorite, or at least around this Southern California area. It was intense, man. There was so many close games, so many fun games to watch. I mean, it's hard to pick out favorites, but it was a very, very intense group stage where anybody really seemed like they could go through, except for
Saudi Arabia and Egypt and some of those really bad. Yeah, Morocco Egypt, and Costa Rica.
The best players in the world, Salah,
that's true. That's a good point.
They went down. So it's Iran. They're like ranked top 50 maybe.
Yeah.
And they had a chance to go through. There were some crazy games. It was fun.
And Kyle, I want to bring you in on this because you're you've watched a lot of mornings as well. Let's talk a little bit about the VAR, the review thing. And I know that we touched on this last week, Kyle, but what are your opinions on them using the review and having these refs, extra refs in the booth, look at some of these calls to kind of go over some of the penalties or the handballs or out of bounds or those sorts of things?
So it's interesting. Normally, I'm a big fan of the video review, and I think that's because I want to see them get it right. Mm-hmm. When it comes to these big games, when it comes to playoffs, World Cup is a pretty good example of where there's so much on the line. And I think looking at the fans in the stadium and looking at the fans that are watching these games, there's so much passion involved in rooting for their teams that you want to see them get it right. If somebody's going to win, they want to win legitimately. If somebody is going to lose, you want to see them lose legitimately, right?
Right.
But soccer is a unique sport in that there's so much flow, and you don't want to stifle that. And I think that in football and basketball and some of these, you know, the last 15, 20 minutes of every game, it's already slow. Mm-hmm. Football is already slow, right? Like every play, there's a timeout, there's a replay, last 2 minutes that. There's a 2-minute warning that somebody came up with in 1992 that was just had to be an advertising CEO that was like, what should we do to slow down football even more? Oh, I know, put a random freaking stoppage before it already starts to slow down. So I think American sports have a tendency to be slow already. So adding replay doesn't necessarily kill it. Soccer is just so organic, and it's so rhythmic. And one of the things I enjoy so much about watching it, especially in the World Cup, is that from kickoff to halftime is legit is 45 mm-hmm. minutes.
You're right.
And then from halftime to the end is 90 minutes, you know, or 45 minutes plus stoppage time, and you know that's what you're going to get. You know when it starts and when it's going to end, and there is no guessing.
Right.
So I don't know how the soccer community would react to adding something that would slow down the game. So I'm not necessarily for it.
Got it.
I also know that there's a lot of fouls, and Greg, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, right? But there's a lot of pushing and physical you know, actions that take place where I know a lot of people are saying, well, that's a foul and that isn't. Oh, that's a push, that isn't. Oh, that's a, that should be PK, no, it isn't. So I think there's a lot of stuff that the refs have to decide and be very, they have to be opinionated about what they call and what they don't, depending on how the game's going. And they're not going to get every call like you would want them to get in the NFL or in the NBA. And I hope, you know, Greg's the expert, but I hope that's right. And I don't think that they should slow down the game to make sure they get all those correct.
Yeah, Greg, before you answer, two things. I think the guy is pretending to be hurt. Slow it down enough as it is already. And then on top of that, Greg, also be careful. Kyle is entering into hate mode for the 2-minute warning. So go ahead and answer with caution.
I'm kind of with him there, but I feel the same way about VAR that I do any other sport, right? If they could do it and do it right, it makes sense. If they can make the correct calls and in a timely manner, they all make sense. You guys see the videos before in some of these games. There's 17 people sitting and watching 47 TVs.
Right.
How can they not make that call within a 30-second time period when they're all looking at it? That's what bothers me the most, because they actually show them in their booth. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is kind of my interpretation of it. But if they do it right, it makes sense again. They missed some calls. They had some judgment call handballs that they called penalty kicks, and then another one that they didn't call a penalty kick. It's still up to the referee to make the final decision. And when you have 47 people watching 100 TVs, I'm getting bigger here. It kind of makes you think they're not doing their job. It bothers me a little bit. And I agree with Kyle, the organic feel of it all. It slows it down. They have earpieces in. They included goal line technology, which is awesome, because that's just like a little buzzer on your wrist. But I think it's going a little far with VAR, and it just takes too long.
Fair enough.
So one of the things I want to say, because Greg kind of touched on it, right, is I think this goes back to like the balls and strikes conversation in baseball.
Right.
Like, do you want to push technology so far that you're taking all the judgment calls out of the sport? Mm-hmm. And I don't think you want to do, right? Because soccer, if you watch these games, is so physical.
It's a lot more physical than I thought, for sure. Like, you see it on TV and you're like, whoa, these guys are grabbing and holding. And, like, they do take dives, but, like, there's a lot of physicality before the dive a lot of times.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a lot of similarity to basketball in a sense that a foul going to the rim sometimes could be a foul to one ref and not to the other ref. And if you're slide tackling and you catch all ball, but you catch the shin guard one time, like, it could be, you know, depending on who is calling that play, it could be called differently. Right. Same way with basketball. You drive to the rim and you catch half ball, half wrist. One ref calls it, one other guy doesn't. And that's why I bring up the balls and strikes conversations, because I think that some sports have to be left to the refs, to the umps. And guess what? You're not going to get them all, but you're going to get some and you're not going to get others. And I feel like at the end of the day, it's all going to wash out.
Right.
That's good. Most of the time, you're not going to get, you know, all strikes and no balls and where they miss. And you're not going to, you know, when you drive to the rack, they're not going to miss every call. They're going to get some. They're going to miss others. But let's leave it up to the refs. Let's try proactively not to slow this game down, because with soccer, part of the beauty of it is that it is so organic and it flows so much. Mm-hmm. And then even when they get to penalty kicks, you know, after that extra, those 2 15-minute periods are over and they still don't have a winner, they get to the penalty kicks in like 10 minutes.
Right.
And that's beautiful, because no other sport does that. Yeah. In the NFL, when the games are over, it takes them like freaking 30 minutes to do the goddamn coin toss just to get to overtime. It's like, let's get this going. Like, everybody's watching it. I know there's advertisers involved and I'm rambling.
Kyle's in hate mode. Everyone take cover.
I'm rambling, but I'm just saying, like, soccer is one of the few sports where they've protected the original idea of the game.
Right.
So just keep it.
Yeah. I agree. And I think this, this also lends itself to another discussion that I want to have about some of the decisions that happen in the World Cup using VAR. And then also the next one, the World Cup fair play. And Greg, I know you're pretty well versed in this, but basically what it was is that if two teams came to a tie, both in goals scored, goals against, points and all of that, they would go to what's called the World Cup fair play, where they would look at if teams got yellow cards, red cards, too many fouls. And if they did, the other team would move on, which basically is how Japan made it to the knockout stage, because Senegal had 2 yellow cards and Japan had none. So Japan got to move on. Greg, what are you hearing about World Cup fair play? How are people perceiving that, receiving it? What's going on with that?
Well, this is the first time, the first World Cup that it's ever come into play. So this is the first time it's really kind of being shown for what it is. And, you know, you have a team that's exciting, like Senegal, fast. Just they were exciting to watch play, get knocked out because they had two extra yellow cards over Japan, who it's all coming to light now that Japan saw that Senegal was losing. So they just sat back and just passed the ball around. So they stopped playing, which is that fair play? They just kind of, you know what I mean? That's the whole point. They have the games at the same time. So you can go one of two ways. The funny thing is the next rule is when it gets to the eighth tiebreaker, if they're tied on fair play, is a random draw. They basically pick a name out of a hat. So I think they kind of forgot what – they didn't really know what they were going to do after they found six tiebreakers. They kind of just started making things up. So I think you'll see it change and by the next World Cup. It lends itself to kind of not allowing the teams to keep playing and keep pushing forward and keep striving for that win, right? I mean, that's what Japan did. Even though the score was there, they just stopped playing soccer. They just passed the ball around the back and didn't care if they lost or did anything, and it kind of ruined the game a little bit.
So they got to move forward based on World Cup fair play by not really actually playing fair in the game that they were in.
And that's what Senegal's coach is saying. He's trying to bring it all up, saying to FIFA and all them that, hey, look, we were pushing ourselves to win. We needed to score goals. We wanted to score more goals. We didn't just play defense the whole game. And this team just started passing the ball around, and if you want to call it fair play, is that true fair play?
Interesting. Well, you know, it was an interesting topic of discussion because that's how Japan moved on, but ultimately it didn't matter because they lost to Belgium 3-2 in a real heartbreak. They were up 2-0 and ended up losing. I know that because I had Japan in my bracket, so that is really unfortunate, but... I want to talk a little bit about the teams that are left and the matchups and get into a little bit of prediction stuff. Before we do that, though, like I said, so the eight teams that are left, the four games are Uruguay versus France, Brazil versus Belgium, Russia versus Croatia, and Sweden versus England. And a lot of times, you know, whenever I watch the World Cup or the Olympics, I love to see if any of the matchups had any major wars back in their history. It's just me. Kyle, I'm sure you're the same. You're a history major. You know, obviously Russia fights with everyone, so there's a story always there. But my favorite one that I found for this group of eight is that Sweden did have a war with England. They had the Anglo-Swedish War between 1810 and 1812, but this was not a normal war. This was the most Swedish war ever. First of all, it was a bloodless war that existed only on paper. And second, it didn't actually stop England from putting any ships on the Swedish islands or trading with Baltic states. So basically, Sweden was like, hey, this is war. Not really, just don't do whatever you want as long as you don't take our IKEA. So that is an interesting war that happened between the two countries. But as far
it was like a Twitter beef in 1810. Yeah.
Exactly. Sweden was like, hey, you can't do that. Okay, shoot, you're a lot bigger and stronger than us. You can do that. Just don't be too mean to us. Oh, anywho. But Greg, so which matchup are you most interested in the four games that remain?
So first off, you guys were talking about basketball earlier. This is very much the West and the East here. Mm-hmm. So you have the top four teams that are left that are all playing against each other. France, Uruguay, Brazil, Belgium, they're the top four teams left in the World Cup. So it's pretty exciting to see them kind of face off against each other. And then you got the East, where you got England, Sweden, Croatia, and Russia. I've been pulling for England, so I'd like to see them kind of squeeze through. But that top, that West, I mean, it's just as exciting as the NBA playoffs. Watching Brazil and Belgium play, I mean, they're the top two teams kind of in there. And then France is super exciting to watch. They got this young guy, Mbappe, that is just phenomenal. Scored two goals for him last game, so I'm excited to watch him.
I'm sorry, did you say Mbop?
He wasn't born then, but it's Mbappe.
Okay, it's the French version of Hansen's major one-hit wonder.
Yes, Dan would be proud.
Dan would be very proud.
So can you give us a 1-8 seeding?
Yeah, like who are the top teams left?
If you went through these eight teams, you would have Brazil would be one, France would be two, Belgium would be three. Croatia would be four, in my opinion, but everybody else's opinion is Uruguay. Then Croatia is five. You got England 6, we got Russia 7, Sweden 8.
Sweden 8, really, all the way at the bottom. Even after what they did to England back in 1810 and 1812.
Yeah, the
No
maths
one's
is
counting
supposed to be worse than the United
that.
States of America, and we're not even
What?
playing in this tournament.
Seriously?
So it's kind of interesting.
But they won today. They beat Switzerland.
They did, and it was a very boring game. Did you watch
I did watch that
that
game. Okay, so if you let's do predictions then for each of the four games. Who do you take in Uruguay versus France?
Yeah, as long as Luis Suarez doesn't bite anybody, I'll take France over Uruguay.
Okay.
I don't think you can stop Brazil, even though Belgium's looked real good. So I'd say France versus Brazil on that side, which would be an extremely, extremely fun game to watch. I'm pulling for England over Sweden, which I think they should win. They've been playing real well this tournament. And then Croatia's kind of my dark horse. I think they actually might and could win it all.
Really? Okay, with Luka Modric in the middle.
Yes, he is. He's been phenomenal for them, and their defense has just been rock solid. So they're kind of the dark horse that nobody's talking about that I
Okay.
can really see them pushing through.
So are you picking Croatia to win at all? Is that are you're going hands
You know, when I
down?
say dark horse, that means I don't really want to pick them,
Okay.
but if they win, I'll pretend I picked them, you
Okay. Then who are you actually picking to win at all?
know? It's the winner of France and Brazil, just like the winner of
You don't get to choose
Sin and
to.
Golden State.
Who Greg, there's no wishy-washy on here, okay?
We're going to go with Mbappé, and they will take it all. Mbappé for the win, Alex
Okay.
Trebek.
Kyle, what about you? Who do you like so far that you've seen, and who do you think is going to win it all in these final eight?
I love Greg's seeding. I feel like I'm learning so much right now. And I've watched a lot of this, but it's interesting to me who he thinks is the, you know, the top four seeds, because I don't know enough to know if that's traditionally who the powerhouses are. I don't think that's necessarily the case, right? Like, is Belgium normally a powerhouse team? They are.
They have been, yeah. They have the longest winning streak going into this tournament.
Really?
Wow.
But like, if let's just say crazy stuff didn't happen, if Spain and Germany would have advanced, they would be above Belgium.
Germany would be Spain, and
Really?
probably be a little bit blown, but
Okay.
Germany definitely.
Interesting. All right. So Kyle, who do you like? Who are you taking?
So I'm kind of hoping Russia continues.
Just as the home country?
I just think that's such a cool story. I watched the last match that they played, and it was just so exciting. And
Yeah.
that stadium just went nuts. And it went to PKs, which is obviously exciting. But if Russia could get one more round, they would play for Greg's seeding, an 8 or a 6, which they could beat. So there's a possibility that Russia could get to this World Cup final, which even just if they got to the final would be bonkers.
Yeah, that would be
Because
crazy.
that place would, because you know it's in Moscow. The
Right.
final's obviously in Moscow. And it would just be absolutely nuts. So I'm kind of hoping Brazil, France, because I agree with Greg, I really want to see that. Because I watched France's last match and they were just, how many goals they scored in a short period of time was just,
It was absurd.
oh, it was insane. Like
Yeah.
they made that defense, they just shredded it.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of like to see Brazil, Russia in the World Cup final. I feel like that would be a traditional powerhouse with Neymar and that team going full speed against the underdog home country with a whole bunch of people drinking vodka. I just feel like it would be so much fun to watch.
Okay. And then who do you take in who wins it all? Between Brazil and Russia.
And Brazil.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, I'm going England versus France in the finals. Two countries that do not like each other, but they do share a tunnel. And I'm going France wins it all. Mbappe.
They're allies, though.
They were allies, but I feel like the English think that French are assholes and the French think that English are assholes. Sorry, I just cursed twice in a row on this podcast, and
Well,
we
nobody really likes the French.
except Mbappe. But France is loaded with talent, right? Like if you look at
Oh,
this,
yeah.
aside from Brazil having Neymar and some of the other top guys, like France has top to bottom some of the most talented roster maybe left. Greg, you can that's just what I've heard. But you can maybe elaborate.
Yeah, absolutely. France and Germany going into it were the two deepest rosters. I mean, they were just stacked when you look at their teams. It was pretty unbelievable.
I don't know that kid's name, but France had the first teenager to score two goals in a World Cup elimination game.
That was Mbappe. That was Mbappe.
Yeah, he's 19 years old. That's crazy.
19 years old. Jeez, that's insane. Well, so, okay. There you have it. We've all made our predictions. Greg, any other stories from the World Cup that you think are noteworthy before we move on and we bring you into our cage for the Blitz package?
Yeah, I'm excited for that. Just one thing that is kind of interesting is it just everybody's thought that Ronaldo and Messi are probably going to go down as two of the top three players ever to play the game. Maybe the top two, depending on who you talk to. Neither one of them have scored a goal in the knockout rounds of the World Cup.
Ever
played in. Never, ever, 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 ever.
Wow.
So it's a very interesting. Ronaldo's played in six games. Messi's played in eight. No goal scored by either of them.
That is so interesting. And, you know, this is an interesting discussion because it brings up club versus national, right? Because, like, those two are obviously two of the best players ever when it comes to club. Goals, assists, wins, awards, right? But then you get on the national stage with your team, your national team, and it turns into a bit of a LeBron and the Cavs situation where you have the best players, two of the top, but each the rest of their teams from each of those countries, Portugal and Argentina, are far inferior to a lot of the other talent across the other teams. And so you have one guy trying to do the large majority of the work, and I don't think it works as well in soccer because you have 11 guys on the field at one time, and so it just doesn't translate. You could speak more to that, but that is my interpretation of it.
Yeah, kind of the last thing. I mean, it's kind of like this day and age. I think we'll start seeing it getting better as the NBA, they all want to play with each other. I think you'll start seeing that in soccer a little bit too, where they'll start getting along, but they go the entire year hating each other and rivals and this and that. And then it's so choppy when they play on the national team. There's like an international break in the winter, and then there's one in the summer. So it's so choppy that you're with your club team a lot more. That I think you build these kind of this hatred towards your teammate who might play on Real Madrid and you're on Barcelona, and then right. You got to go play for a World Cup with each other. So I know that was England's issue forever ago because they were all rivals and never even kind of wanted to show their cards to each other. So maybe that's the case, and they just are on an island.
Okay. Before we move on to the Blitz package, Messi or Ronaldo?
I hate to say it, but I'm going Ronaldo.
Kyle, what about you?
Yeah, Ronaldo.
You guys
I think I watched that.
Bunch of bums. Bunch of Kevin Loves over there, Kyle. That's what you are. Messi is the best.
No, he isn't. I watched that first group match that Ronaldo had, and he went nuts. And I watched two or three matches this World Cup with Messi, and I wasn't a fan of the body language. I feel like he didn't bring the passion and the intensity that Ronaldo brings. It was very Steph Curry-ish for me. Mm. Where it was like, I know I'm good. I'm chewing on my mouthpiece, and I'm just kind of waiting for my opportunity. And I didn't like that. Mm. I think that Ronaldo brings a ton of passion and physicality to the game that I just appreciate. And this World Cup just kind of sealed it for me. So.
Okay. So to take this a step further, is LeBron the Cristiano of basketball, or is Cristiano Ronaldo the LeBron of soccer?
They're going to play on three clubs each. You heard it here. Ronaldo's leaving Real Madrid, going to Juventus this year. They'll be the same. Look, Ronaldo is the LeBron of soccer.
Really? Will any of them come to LA? Will any of them come to LA?
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I love him. All right. Well, since we've already done kind of a couple Blitz package questions, let's just transition to the official Blitz package. This is the segment where anything goes. We each have questions prepared, but we don't know what we're going to ask each other. Kyle, you look like you have a good one waiting for us.
Yeah. So all the World Cup talk got me thinking about the ties in the sport. Mm. And although in the NFL you don't see them very often, they happen. And over the last couple of years, we've seen a few. Mm-hmm. And what I don't like to see is ties in the division standings, because I feel like it just throws everything for a loop, right? Because if you have two teams in the entire NFL that have ties, nothing matches up. it's just all off.
Right.
So watching the penalty kicks after overtime in the World Cup got me thinking, should the NFL adopt a penalty kicks type mentality after overtime is over? If that happens, and if they do, what would you like to see as the sudden death winner takes all version?
For football. Yeah, I think college has it right. I love that. I love from the 25-yard line, and you have basically two chances at a first down before you have to score, or you kick a field goal, and then you let the other team go, and if they score more points, they win. I love the college extra time, or whatever you want to call it. I think that they got it right. I think the NFL should go into that.
Greg?
Or you could do field goal kickers.
I think Tony's right. I mean, college has it right, but how fun would it be to start on the 20-yard line, you both make it, you move back 10 yards, start around the 30-yard line, both kick it, make it, move on back 10 more yards, and you just kind of have that, because those guys can make it from 70 yards with no pressure on them. It'd be kind of fun to watch, I don't know, but I'd go with college football rules first.
Yeah, I love that.
So I agree, and then I think college does a better job than the NFL. But if the NFL wanted to keep it the way that they keep it with an actual overtime period, once that overtime is over, and after that tie has happened, which you've seen a couple times, I think you go to a field goal kickoff.
Oh.
I think you put your kicker at the 40-yard line, kick it a 57-yarder or a 40, whatever you want to do. What if you want to do a 37-yarder, move it back, 57-yarder, move it back, and just wait till you got the best kicker? And one person would say, well, the best kicker doesn't necessarily choose the best team. Well, that's true, but in soccer, the best penalty kicks don't necessarily choose the best team. But you have a certain amount of time to get to that point. And if you can't solve it until that point, guess what? Luck's going to solve it. And that's what happens in the World Cup. I've seen like three games go to penalty kicks so far this World Cup, and I'm pretty sure that the team that won the penalty kicks wasn't the best team, or maybe they weren't, but the other team had just as much of a shot as they did to get to that point and score, and now we're just going to have to figure it out because everybody's exhausted.
Fair.
And you have to realize in the NFL, these guys are already dying 16 weeks out of the year. Maybe we get rid of the overtime period because they're already exhausted, and we just go 30-yard line each team. If that doesn't solve it, field goals.
What about if the field goals have to – one person from each position group has to kick a field goal, 30 yards? So your kicker gets to kick one, an offensive lineman, defensive lineman, wide receiver, cornerback, linebacker.
That's what I'm talking about.
That would be kind of fun to watch. That's, I'm going to be honest.
Bring Ocho Cinco back.
Oh, all right, Greg, hit us with yours. What do you got for us?
All right, so I'm going to keep it in the soccer world here. And basically what I'm about to ask, don't listen to anything I said before because it'll mess you up. So okay. I'm going with FIFA World Rankings. It's a little quiz. I don't have your fancy little sound effects on my end, but quiz here.
We're going to do
elimination. So if you miss, we'll just move back over. And we'll kind of zigzag. Start with Tone, move over to Kyle.
Okay.
Top 10 FIFA World Rankings by country.
Okay.
This is entering the World Cup. So this is before all these games happen. Top 10 countries in the FIFA World Rankings.
Okay.
First one.
Germany.
Check. First, they're number one.
Boom. Number two. Oh, Kyle, go ahead.
Brazil.
Yep, number two.
Ooh. Okay, let's go. Ooh, man. France.
Yep, number one, two, three, four, five, six. Number seven.
Okay.
Belgium.
Number three.
Spain.
Number 10.
Ooh, boom. Okay. Ooh, man.
Uruguay.
That is one wrong for
Kyle. Oh! Sorry, Kyle. Let's go England.
That is one wrong for
Tony. Oh, no way. They weren't in the top 10. Wow. Okay.
Kyle.
Croatia?
That is too wrong for Kyle.
Oh, man. Okay, hold on.
Hey, wait, where are we? How many do we have? How many are we missing?
You've gotten one, two, three. You're halfway there. You've gotten five.
Okay. I'm going to go Colombia.
Nope.
Oh, no.
I'll finish it off for you guys. I'm not here all day. So number four is Portugal.
Oh, really?
Number five is Argentina.
Oh, okay. Damn, sure enough.
Six is Switzerland. You had seven at France. Eight is Poland.
Poland?
Number nine is a team that's not even in the World Cup in Chile.
Wow.
And number 10 is Spain.
Interesting. That's crazy.
Yeah, and they find their FIFA World Rankings just kind of a back. You play friendlies, and they rate you on your friendly matches, and some of them don't even matter, and some of them your team, your best players are playing for their club team and not that. So it's kind of off, but Chile is a team that was surprised me that didn't make the World Cup this year. They have Alexis Sanchez, who's off the chains, and that's kind of surprising.
I was going to say, how is it possible that so many of these great teams aren't in this top eight? I mean, this isn't the semis, this is the quarters. Like, should Argentina and Portugal, these guys, be here? I was under the impression that Portugal wasn't that good. Ronaldo was just incredible. That's not the case, obviously.
No, it's not the case. Their defense is very good. They have some good players. I mean, they have starting players around the world on top club teams. But it all depends on how you get through your bracket, right? I mean, if you get through first and second, Portugal, who did Portugal lose to? I mean, they lost to Argentina, lost to France. So, I mean, them matching up in the second next round wasn't supposed to happen, right? I mean, they were both supposed to get first and spread out the bracket. That's why you got this whole East versus West kind of thing going on left, and teams didn't perform how they should have been.
Interesting. Hmm. All right. Well, thanks for the quiz. You kicked our ass. That's okay. So mine, I'm going to start, because tomorrow is the 4th of July, I have some fun 4th of July facts, and then I've got a couple questions for you guys at the end. So to start, fact number one, Benjamin Franklin wanted the turkey to be the national animal, but was outvoted when John Adams and Thomas Jefferson chose the bald eagle. What the hell, Ben? The bald eagle is way cooler. 1941 was the first year the 4th of July was a paid national holiday. Over $1 billion will be spent on 4th of July beer. There will be a 42% decrease in air quality on the 4th due to fireworks. Over an estimated 150 million hot dogs will be consumed tomorrow. That's roughly one dog for every two people in the U.S. And Joey Chestnut holds the record for 72 hot dogs eaten in 10 minutes on the 4th of July. So, two questions for you. First of all, getting into a little bit of your traditions, what is your favorite 4th of July food? And second, what food would you be willing to participate in a food eating contest with, as Joey Chestnut did with the hot dog?
I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, go ahead. I got
it. So, 4th of July tradition. I feel like 4th of July encompasses a lot of just general American traditions. Mm-hmm. Like barbecuing and burgers and hot dogs and day drinking and
fireworks
and getting too much sun and like all those things. I feel like 4th of July is just like all those things like wrapped together. But I do love the fireworks. You know, every year I am not super stoked to make the trek with the kids wherever the hell we have to go to get to fireworks. And it takes forever and it's really crowded and you can't freaking park. And then you get there and all these things go off and you're like, this is tight.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Like, they're loud and you get to watch a bunch of bombs go off and make a bunch of colors. Like, I don't know, like it tickles your senses like you don't think that it would.
Right.
So I do enjoy that. What was the second part of your question?
Which food would you eat in a food eating contest? What do you think you could just crush an absurd amount of food? What type of food?
Any protein is just rough.
Yeah.
Like, I understand like the whole hot dog thing, but A, I don't know that I could crush that many buns.
Yeah, they water them. They put them in the water so they just like dissolve in their mouth. Which I feel like that defeats the purpose of a hot dog.
Ugh. Oh. I do love a good all beef hot dog.
Okay.
Like a Costco hot dog or like a Nathan's hot dog.
Yeah.
Tailgating, like you cook up a good all beef hot dog on a barbecue. It's It's not a ballpark, you know, boiled.
Right.
It's different. It's legit.
It's legit. Yeah. Good point.
But I mean, how many I could eat? I don't know. So I don't know the answer. I don't know if I could eat anything.
You would not willingly participate in a food eating contest for any certain type of food.
I could put down some food. I mean, everybody knows that, but I don't know. My protein's rough. Like maybe Mac salad or something. I could take some Mac
salad. You would be in the Mac salad food eating contest.
I like Mac salad. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of.
Fair enough. What about you, Greg?
So first thing, I'm very glad Ben got outvoted, because what the heck would we do on Thanksgiving if turkey was our national?
Yeah. How much more badass is the bald eagle than the turkey? Ben Franklin was a smart dude, but that was a dumb decision. We all have those. We all have those.
Turkeys don't even fly. They're lazy. But you want to make a lazy fat bird our national pet or whatever it is?
Oh my gosh. National pet. Everyone has to have a turkey. Everyone is mandatory to have a turkey. All right. Sorry, Greg. Go ahead.
No, that's good. I don't even remember the questions. I think hamburgers are something I go for. Hamburgers, hot dogs, all that. That okay. is something we eat every 4th of July. Beer, I'm right with you there. You drink too much beer, get too much sun, eat too much. There's one thing that, and this is completely against the protein, but I'll probably eat about 50 cookies tomorrow, guys.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, I will walk by that cookie tray and just put them down just just by habit, I guess. So I would probably lose, but I would go into a cookie eating contest okay. if I had to pick a food.
Okay.
I don't think there's much else I could do.
But it's so true, right? You walk by the cookie tray and you're just like, well, I walked by, I might as well take one. I mean, here it is. Yeah, I'll take it. It would be rude for me not to take a cookie.
Yeah, my over-under is really probably about 30 tomorrow.
Yeah, so I think, obviously, I'm with you guys with the hamburgers and hot dogs. One of the things that I remember from my childhood before my grandma passed away is every 4th of July, she would bake up this incredible lemon cake. Similar to Greg's cookie situation, I would absolutely destroy a lot of lemon cake. Like, it was bad news. So I do – that is a 4th of July tradition for sure. But for me, and Kyle knows this about me, if I had to enter into any food eating contest, I would absolutely – I might win a donut eating contest. I can crush – I've tried once, and I ate 9 out of 12 dozen once on my own.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and I probably could have gone.
Sugar, dude.
Yeah, well, you know, sugar's healthy for you, from the latest American Journal of Science, from what I read. But yeah, I could do a donut eating contest for sure, and like anything other than probably coconut. If it doesn't have coconut on it, I could do it.
Nice,
Kyle. Didn't I went one at the USC game? Didn't I buy with like 6 donuts, and you were the only one who had one? I ate the rest of them.
Yeah, the little
Randy's donuts.
Yeah, little Randy's donuts down below the tunnels have that. That's the first, I didn't even know that was there, and all of a sudden you straight up sniper eagle eyed it. You were like, "There's a donut shop over there," and it was like a half a mile down, like below the tunnel, like peeking out with like a little bead of sun going on it, and you just happened to like pick it up off the corner of your eye. I was like, "I guess that's there, dude."
It was just a dark alley. Somewhere in the USC's Coliseum, where I was just like, hey, I'm going to go back in this alley and get some donuts, Kyle. Don't worry, if I don't come back out, it'll be all right.
They're like $6 a piece.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Anywho, Greg, thank you very much for coming on and enlightening Kyle and I on the World Cup and soccer in general. It is not our forte, but we are rabid fans, and I'm glad that you could come on and give us a little expertise. So thank you.
Yeah, I had fun. Thank you, guys. Keep watching, man.
Absolutely, and we'll try and have you back on in a couple of weeks when the finals is over. Maybe if you're free, if you're back from Russia.
Yeah, it might be a long trip, but a little jet lag. But whenever you need me, I'm there for you guys.
Okay, and I just realized that this podcast is so much more than just a podcast. We talked about Ben Franklin and bald eagles. We talked about the Swedish Anglo-Saxon War, whatever that was, the Anglo-Swedish War. I mean, this is it's a history podcast too, is what it is.
I am a historian. I'm a licensed historian.
Is license the right word?
Yeah, I have a degree in history. I feel like that's a license. That's not the same thing.
Fair enough. Well, Greg, like I said, thank you very much. Kyle, obviously, Thanks for coming on. We'll do the same damn thing, same damn time next week.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, guys.
All right. See ya.